Good morning, everybody. It is day 9 of the Euros. Yes, the group stages are well underway. A couple of teams already qualified in Germany and Spain. Today, I am back off to Dortmund, and yes, you're going to go, oh no, here he goes. He's going to go on about the Westfalen Stadium. Yep, you're 100% right. The venue of perhaps one of the greatest games I ever saw, which was just 4 days ago as Turkey took on Georgia. But I also, you know, have a love affair prior in 2006 when Germany took on Poland and then Italy in the World Cup semi-final. Today, Turkey will be taking on Portugal, both teams with 3 points. And really, this could be a, for me, a passing of the torch. We'll have Cristiano Ronaldo on one side, should he start. And then this young kid, Arda Güler, who also plays for Real Madrid like Ronaldo once did. And he is just lighting up this tournament. 19 years of age. I mean, come on, left-footed. He's the Turkish Messi. Oh, if these two have a game, it's going to be something so special. But it's going to be nuts in Dortmund. The Turkish fans last time out, the atmosphere they created was something that I've not really experienced before. And I've been to a lot of games. So expectation. Isn't it terrible when you have massive expectations for a game and then it falls flat? But somehow, I don't think it will tonight. I think it's going to be amazing. So, yep, I'm going to get on the train. But while I'm on the train, I'll give you a chance to listen to part two of my chat with Misha Scher. And we talk about where World Cups and European Championships should be hosted, amongst a bunch of other really interesting things. I hope you enjoy it because I had so much fun chatting with Misha. Anyway, we'll be back soon.
Interesting point. But I'll push back now. I think I now have had time to reflect on this. And when initially when the World Cup went to Qatar, I thought, oh, it's really Qatar. I mean, you know, there's no football there. There's no heritage. There's no. What's the reason? Why would you take it there? But you know what? Having gone and having seen what it was like and what it's actually done, not just for Qatar but for that part of the world, right? It's it was a Middle Eastern World Cup. It was hosted in Qatar, but it was a Middle Eastern sort of African World Cup. And you look at it, you forget, like, I think sometimes it's very easy for us to become very Eurocentric because club football is dominated by, you know, in England and in Germany and in Spain, right? But football is a global game, and as much as I enjoy going to stadiums in England, and I'm fortunate to be living, you know, within, you know, 10-15 minutes of some of the, you know, some of the nicest stadiums around, I don't think I have a right to, you know, to always have some of the best football on my doorstep. And when you bring it to different parts of the world, you are exposing people in that part of the world to football. And I think that's, you know, I think it's important. It's not, you know, for example, there are a lot of people in if the tournament was in England, there'd be a lot of people in Morocco who wouldn't have come. Right, but because the tournament was in Qatar, Moroccans are probably the most well-represented team. Same goes for some other teams from sort of North Africa, and the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, and so on. So, it's important not to get to a place where we feel that football only belongs in Argentina or Brazil, you know, some of the biggest countries or some of the most evolved ones. Because how do you actually how do you actually develop? How do you make other teams, other parts of the world competitive? How do you bring more fans into the game? The way you do it is, look, you've been a football fan, your whole life. And I bet you didn't fall in love with football just watching it on TV. You were going to the football. You had an opportunity to experience it live, to see what it feels like to be at top level football with other people, and that's what gets you excited, because nothing's like live. And I think that's where the beauty of taking it to Africa, people who would have attended World Cup in South Africa, probably wouldn't have had the ability to, people from Nigeria, from Ivory Coast, would not have been able to travel to Russia, for instance. And Russia, for example, again, not to get, I mean, obviously a lot has happened since then, but the fact that I think there's a role, I personally believe this, and some people might disagree, is that I think football has, and sport has, a role that is bigger than just sport. And when you go to a place, and when I went to Qatar, there might be things I thought of before, or I thought I knew, or I thought I liked or didn't like. But when I went there and I spent time there and I spoke to people and I got to know them, I learned a lot, and it opened up my eyes to a part of the world I probably wouldn't have traveled to had football not gone there. And I think that's also important. So that's, a very convoluted way of answering a question. I don't even know if I answered it.
So sorry for interrupting Misha's commentary here, but the beauty of these Euros is the fact that you get to meet so many different journalists. And this is a perfect segue for a gentleman from Qatar who works for BN Sports, who had this take that kind of mirrors what Misha was talking about. So we're going to listen to him, and then we'll jump back to Misha.
Ibrahim Kadra, I work for BN Sports.
What's the reaction to the Euros in the Middle East?
It's complicated because, Germany, when Qatar hosts the World Cup, they've been leading the European mean criticized for Qatar hosting the World Cup. So now they have to wait for a response if there is anything going well. That's what we've seen here in this stadium when it was raining, a lot of rain around. It wasn't that, a lot of clashes between the fans. We talk about Serbia, England, and some other fans. They criticize Qatar of banning the alcohol, but here we see them doing the same. In England, Serbia banned. They banned alcohol, or the percentage of alcohol drinks within the stadium. It wasn't in the minimum level, I think, or something like this. It was banned, alcohol drinks. So they did the same, what they criticized Qatar for. So that's why there is some criticism from Arabic world about, hosting. In terms of matches and the game itself, it's really good, and everyone excited about what's going on inside. But outside the stadium is a different story.
Qatar to Germany, two different worlds. Your sense as a journalist, how have you felt it in your heart?
It's heritage. If we talk about football in Europe, of course it's bigger. Fans, culture, everything is a different story. But for me, football is for all. If you're going to host, big tournaments, big sports events in the other side of the world, where people like excited to host the world as well, it's another story, another dimension. You give another dimension for football. And that's why it's totally different between here and there.
It really is truly fascinating how we can see the same thing and have two contrasting emotions and opinions, right? Well, back to Misha as he describes how the World Cup could potentially look in the United States and global football going forward. My thought is that realistically, I think there's probably only 12 countries that can actually host a World Cup.
I mean, look, we can, let's just agree to disagree. I think I understand that a lot of countries, or not a lot, but a few countries, I suppose, who have hosted the World Cup would struggle to sustain a league or be able to, utilize those facilities. But I think the intent needs to be so that, you know, we are making football more global and we're looking for ways in which we can go to places where football isn't what it is. And look, these things do take time, right? That you live in LA now. I remember MLS, you know, 20 years ago, teams, you know, when I was coming out of, 20 years, 25 years ago, when I was coming out, the, you know, MLS was struggling and contracted. The two teams in, I think, in Miami and Tampa, you know, went away. And it was a real struggle to, you know, to get it going. Now you have a league, thriving league, can't remember, 30 teams maybe, or so on. So, look, nothing's built overnight. I think, I've traveled to some. They have a football culture there. They're hugely ambitious. They're looking to build sport as part of everything else that they're doing to modernize, right? Again, whatever people may think about the place, but it takes time. And I think that, you know, sport will bring tourism. Tourism will accelerate a lot of the things that they want to do and need, you know, their society. So I take a view, as much as I would love to just come to Germany where we are, you know, it's 1 hour flight, jump on the train, and we're at a game, and I'm gonna go to another game because it's so close today. But other places, just because, you know, they're not traditional football markets or haven't been over the last 30 years, doesn't mean that they can't become football places for the next 20. Otherwise, I mean, you know, my pushback to you is that it is like a super league. Do you know what I mean? We just decide that these are the only countries that, if they're here now and they've been able to build a football infrastructure, they're the only ones who will continue to, you know, to do that going forward. And we have a closed shop. Is that fair? I don't know.
No, I mean, that's a good point, Misha. And it's a good pushback. I think where part of where I'm coming from is having experienced the atmosphere and enjoying the infrastructure of Germany, you think to yourself, well, it's easy. It's easy for the fans. And we began this conversation talking about the business of football. If the business of football is to make the fan experience enjoyable, then surely you would look at locations and countries that can facilitate that. I want to go back to 2010 when I was in South Africa. It was a ball ache, okay? It was a really unpleasant experience trying to get around that country to cover a World Cup. I covered a World Cup in Germany. It was a great experience. You were in Brazil. You were lucky enough to have your own private jet to go around Brazil. Had you been a regular punter, what do you think that experience would have been like?
Yeah, well, look, probably not. You know, probably not great. But you know, moving around U.S., for example, the next World Cup isn't going to be easy either. I mean, you'll have the best stadiums and the best infrastructure, but moving from place to place isn't going to be easy. Most people are going to be based in certain, you know, they'll pick a place where they're going to be. And my other point is, I was at the World Cup in Qatar, and I can tell you, having been to many World Cups before, it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. Totally different World Cup, unique in its own way, because it was all in one place, basically. You could go to 2-3 games in a day. So is that a cool, you know, is that a great experience for fans? You know, there were days when I went to, you know, Brazil, Croatia, semifinal, extra time, penalty kicks, jumped in a taxi, half an hour later I'm walking in, Holland, Argentina, 90 minutes, extra time, penalty kicks. You know, where else is that possible? I mean, it's just, you know, only in Qatar. And also from a fan experience and, you know, business perspective, when everyone is together in one sort of in one place, it also makes it quite enjoyable. So I guess you just have to kind of, you got to weigh all these things out. But the overarching ambition should be to try and share football around the world and not feel like it belongs. It has some sort of the, like we have a right to, you know, to host it only in sort of developed Western countries like France and Germany and Spain and England and US and whatnot. And that's pretty much.
Okay. Where does football go in the next 10, 20 years? You are a visionary. Come on, I've got to ask you. You're the visionary.
Easy one. I think we will have some form of a Super League. I think that's an, you know, I think that's an
global Super League.
Correct. Yeah, I think that will happen. Not because, again, not because, going back to what I said in 2007 or 2008, not because I want to, but I think people who are running football and people who are watching football will dictate that, and it will be, and it's, it will be different. It, but the dynamic is will have changed by then, because all these sort of hardcore fans that are growing up and, you know, in the tradition of going with their dad and, you know, and fighting for, you know, for some of these traditions to stay in place, those things will go away, unfortunately. And, you know, the young generation coming up, if we're already seeing that they don't have the same affinity to the clubs. You know, they support multiple clubs. They often move. If the player moves, they, you know, move with the player. So, the, you know, the fandom is much more fluid. So, and it's becoming more of a, you know, more of an entertainment product than, I guess, the, you know, your sort of traditional local rivalries, which football, you know, which football has been built.
But that would, that would make me think, though, that European and what global competitions, i.e. European Championships and World Cups, become even more important then, because if kids are moving from club to club, they still have their country.
Yeah, I think that definitely. And we're seeing, look, that's already happening. Those tournaments are getting bigger in size, right? So the your next World Cup is going to be, what, for 48, you know, 48 teams. So that's only going to grow. And I think when it comes to the women's game, I think that's going to happen a lot quicker. I think that it will go straight to that. I think there's, in not too distant future, we will see some form of a global club Super League. Because they don't have the same, so, you know, same sort of constraints. So there is interesting. I do in terms of when you say, where's football going? I think women's football is also over the next 10 to 20 years is going to become massive.
That's another podcast, Misha.
Let's do that. Looking forward to coming back.
Chatting with Misha, I don't know whether to be optimistic or pessimistic on his view of the most beautiful and global game. I guess time will tell, but in the meantime, well, it is all about the Euros. And let's check in now with some of our Turkish counterparts and get a sense of where they are and where this passion comes from and just how far this Turkish team can go in the Euros.
I am Hüseyin Özkök. I am working for Aspor and Radyo Spor, and television and radio.
I was at the game a few days ago against Georgia. One of the most incredible experiences ever. Is it always like this for a Turkish game?
If the game is very important, yes. And the European Championship is a very important tournament. And the Turkish football fans want to see national team.
Looking at the Turkish team, there's some unbelievable players, but the one that really is taking all the news, Arda Güler. Yes. Talk to me about him and where he came from and what he means to the Turkish team.
Arda Güler is very important for Turkish team because he's a young talent, a very good player. He was by Fenerbahce and Real Madrid. He's young, but is play very good for Real Madrid. Ancelotti knows he's very talented, and he gives him chances some matches, and end of the season more chances. He became more chances. I think next more important for Real Madrid, Arda Güler, and European Championship here now is, for him, is very good scene, you know, and he showed that last game with a fantastic goal, and I hope against Portugal he do it again.
Well, that's the view from Turkey. So of course we have to have the view from Portugal.
Carlos Rodrigues, Sport TV Portugal.
Cristiano Ronaldo was just coming onto the scene. Now Cristiano Ronaldo is leaving the scene. What's his legacy for Portugal?
Well, I think that for Portugal, you can really say that no one was like Cristiano Ronaldo. And I think that's the best thing you can say about him, because we had Figo, we had Eusebio, players that gave great memories to the Portuguese people. I never saw Eusebio playing, but when you see Ronaldo and everything that he made for the national team, people can like or dislike Ronaldo. I'm not talking about that. I understand that some people can look at him and don't get the whole picture. But when you look only at Ronaldo as a player, it's impossible that you don't say that Ronaldo is a phenomenon. During the years, all the years that he played, the level that he reached, and he still can be important to the Portuguese team. It's true that nowadays you have other players like Bruno Fernandes, like Bernardo Silva, but I think that everyone looks at Ronaldo like an example at these days in Portugal, and I think there's a before and a after Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, you all know the result by now, and really, it was the Ronaldo and Pepe show. Pepe, the 41-year-old centre-back, was absolutely class. He showed everybody that he's still got the tactical and defensive nous to take on the best and be the best in the world. It really was an outstanding performance. So that's the end of day nine. That's right, day nine is in the books. Tomorrow we are back in Cologne and possibly a trip to Frankfurt to watch the host team, Germany, take on Switzerland. Thanks for listening to Inside Euro 2024. And bye for now. We'll be back tomorrow.